Hello and welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. Longtime listeners know that Beyond the Uniform is a free podcast designed to help the military community succeed in their post-service careers. Normally, we do that by interviewing veterans and world-renowned experts on career paths and topics designed to inform, to empower, and to equip our listeners. Occasionally on Saturdays, I deviate from that normal Monday and Thursday cadence to have a more informal discussion around professional and personal topics. This is one of those episodes, which I call Behind Beyond the Uniform. I have one admin item for today. I got two professional items and then a smorgasbord of personal items. For those of you who have listened to the last few Behind Beyond the Uniforms, you'll remember that I just got back from a week of camping in Death Valley with 50 other men as part of a year-long men's workshop led by John Wineland. I'm still riding the wave of a fantastic time with these men, and I'll share more about that if you stick around for the personal section at the end. I'm also exceptionally fired up because on Wednesday of next week, I'll be interviewing both Jocko Willink and Leif Babin for Beyond the Uniform. Those are the authors of the best-selling books, Extreme Ownership, The Dichotomy of Leadership. It's the highlight of me for the last 3 years that I've done this podcast to be connecting with them. It's just such an honor to interview them. If you don't know who they are, Google it. We are not giving a lot of background in this interview. We're going deep, so do your homework in advance. That episode will be coming out in December 2nd. But first, one admin item. We currently have 5 events at beyondtheuniform.org/events. We'll be adding another 2 shortly. If you already registered for any of these free webinars, you will have likely received an email letting you know that we had to modify the date and time for 3 out of the 5 of those webinars. If you haven't registered for these events, there's even more time to do so now, and those events are all listed at beyondtheuniform.org/events. Just briefly, they are Sales 101. Tyler Johnston from episode 313 will be leading this. He and I connected earlier today. It is fantastic information. I've been doing sales of some sort for over 10 years now, and I learned a ton just in the teaser he walked me through today. A second one is Discovering Your Values. My wife, Rebecca, is going to walk 5 attendees through a live exercise that she does with her CEO and VP of sales clients that helps them identify and live in alignment with their values. A third event is Interviewing 101. I'll walk through some basic tactics to help you get ready for your first or even your 100th interview. I'm talking about veterans and finance as the 4th event, a very high-level overview of a few potential career paths in the finance industry, which is the 4th largest industry veterans go into after their military service. And then 5th, Veterans at the Big 3, which is essentially a part 2 of our recent Veterans in Consulting webinar. All of those are free. All of them are available at beyondtheuniform.org/events. And if you can't attend, register anyways because you'll get a free video copy of the event. It's the only way to get that video is by registering. That is it for our admin items. I wanted to cover 2 professional topics related to 2 unreal interviews I had today. Steve Bain is just killing me with the quality of guests he's lining up for us, so special thanks to him. The first interview I had today is with Shannon Gregory. He works at Xcel Energy. Shannon is such an awesome guy. His military career includes time in both the Marine Corps and the Army National Guard, and so he's faced multiple transitions to a civilian career. Although this is a sponsored interview by Xcel Energy, I'm very, very grateful to them for their financial support of Beyond the Uniform. We intentionally only talk about Xcel Energy for about 4 minutes in a 60-minute conversation. The rest of the interview is exceptionally dense. Shannon talks about resumes, how he has nearly a dozen versions of his resume based on what job he's applying to. He talks about being Clark Kent, not always revealing your superpowers. Yes, you may have dozens and dozens of crazy stories from the military, but based on the position or company to which you're applying, you may just pick one gem out of the entire package of stories and leave the rest in the bag. unused in both your resume and your interview preparation. We talk about networking. Shannon has received several jobs and, more importantly, very helpful intel about the jobs to which he's applying due to his approach to networking, which we go into a lot of detail on. We talk about dealing with depression. We talk about how most of what you need in your civilian career you learned in the military, but it is all about lifelong learning, about building skills and adding to them every step of the way. Shannon is a great example of this. He's held 3 different jobs and also earned his MBA leading up to his role at Xcel. While he may have gone directly to the energy industry, his circuitous route that led him there is exactly what he needed. And lastly, we talk about the energy industry, why you don't have to be a Navy nuke like me to go into the energy industry. We talk about all the disruption and changes going on in this industry and how they need fresh perspectives, just like Shannon's, just like potentially yours. Maybe if you have no direct background in energy, it might be even more appealing to you. I loved our conversation. I plan on staying in regular contact with Shannon. He is an inspirational human being. And that episode will air on November 14th as episode 325, which means I need to edit it this weekend. Gotta love it when it happens like that. The other conversation I had today was with Mike Fink. If you listen to my conversation with Stacey Bear or my recent conversation with Dan Knossen, if you like the flavor of those two conversations, you're going to love this one. It's one of those interviews where I just shut up as much as possible because Micah is a force to be reckoned with. He had so much knowledge and inspiration to share. I wanted to get out of the way and milk every last second of his advice. He had actually a thriving civilian career until 9/11. He was in New York at the time when the towers fell. He ran into the towers, dragging out whoever he could, and he swore in that moment to kill whoever was responsible for that tragedy. He wanted to be an Army Ranger. On the way to enlisting, he ran into a Navy recruiter and signed up and became a Navy SEAL instead. After that, he had 10 years as a Navy SEAL, 4 years as a paramedic, paramilitary, God, I'm blanking on the terminology for it, but a badass doctor. After that, he got out. He moved to Montana with his wife and family. Wackiness ensued. It led him to start a nonprofit called Horses and Heroes. Horses and Heroes, please Google them. It's unbelievable. I am betting money that you're going to donate to this organization before the episode is over. It's just awe-inspiring. If, and I highly recommend you do this, if you Google Micah Fink Horses and Heroes, you'll find his TEDx talk. We'll list it in the show notes as well when the episode goes live. But what Micah talks about in his TEDx talk, as well as in much of our interview, is the importance of struggle. This is something he learned in his 1,010 days of deployment. He had 13 deployments to combat zones, but even more so, he learned this when he returned. As an example, he took up gardening when he got back and started his civilian career. He, for a long time, was just, you know, catering to these plants, brushing away any sediment, just making the seeds as safe and undisturbed as possible. And all of those seeds died. And Micah talks about how we're doing this right now in the veteran community. We're often coddling veterans. We're doing the work for them. We're prescribing them medications. We're trying to keep them from the very pain that will heal them. Neither of us are saying don't take medication. Neither of us are saying that you need to tough these things out. What we're saying is there's a way to approach this that Micah makes a really strong case can be more healing and more beneficial. And this is the approach that Micah and his team take with Horses and Heroes. They take 30 plus veterans into the wilderness each year for 40 days and 40 nights where they face together austerity and challenge. They have water, coffee, meat, and veggies, not a whole lot else. They ride 400 to 500 miles on horses. They learn to shoe horses. They take philosophy courses in the wilderness. They wake up at 4 a.m. to work out, and they do not stop until 10 p.m. Just constant activity. They provide tools so that each individual can mine the depths of who they are. There are so many incredible sound bites from this interview. Two that I love the most are, first, struggle is what gives us value, and everyone is trying to take that away. I'll say that again. Struggle is what gives us value, and everyone is trying to take that away. If you listen to other Behind Beyond the Uniforms, you've probably heard me talk about comfort, about numbing out, about all of these things that keep us from being who we really are. A second quote he had is, he said this to one of the guys on his trip, but it's true of me and many people. You earned a master's degree in other people's ideas, but you're a first grader in you. Again, you earned a master's degree in other people's ideas, but you are a first grader in you. It's a really inspirational interview. I felt honored to have Micah on the show. He's a natural speaker. He's getting a lot of experience speaking publicly lately. He's getting a lot of traction, and I want to see him continue to succeed. I'm going to order one of his hats as part of my donation. His team is awesome. That's episode 327. It'll come out November 21st. I really encourage that you watch the TEDx video about horses and heroes. Before that, you'll get more out of the interview if you do. That is it for the professional section of this episode. I'd like to dive deeper into some personal items. No need to stick around if that does not interest or serve you. I'll be going off-roading a little bit about, things that might not be for everyone. So I'm going to go a bit deeper than normal here. And so the too long didn't read or the TLDR on this is, I personally do not believe that the path to self-improvement can be done in isolation. I don't believe it can be done in comfort. My experience so far has been one that requires other people on my journey, and it also requires me getting out of my comfort zone, and often far outside of it, as we'll get into in a second here. As many of you know, in March of this year, I started a men's program that's called Embodied Men's Leadership Training. It's led by a gentleman named John Wineland, who I'm really, really hoping to have on the podcast soon. I wanted to share a little bit more about the journey of me even getting to this program, because it's a pretty circuitous route leading me to this work. I'm committed to the Embodied Men's Leadership Training for the next 2 years, if not longer. That's how valuable I find it. So to rewind the clock, when my wife and I were living in San Francisco, we did a year of training in Berkeley that's called Nonviolent Communication, started by a gentleman named Marshall Rosenberg. Nonviolent communication is essentially empathetic communication training. It's been extremely helpful to me personally and to my marriage, and even in professional settings. It's not strictly personal. During that training, I met this guy, Dan Villam, who feels like an older brother to me. After we completed that training, which Dan, honestly, he did 2 or 3 years of it before I even met him. He was on his 3rd or 4th year when we met. So we decided to take another different program together called Voice Dialogues. It's actually led by a guy named Tim Kelly, who himself is a Navy veteran. I tried to get him on the show recently, but he declined. But Voice Dialogue, that's sometimes called Parts Work, as I understand it, or as I understood in this 6-month course, it's based on the premise that we each have many different parts inside of us. None of these parts are good. None of them are bad. They're just all different facets of who we are. They're all wanting to be seen and heard. So for instance, there's a part of me that wants and loves to get shit done. This part of me works hard, it's focused, it does not get distracted. This part of me has done wonders for me in the military, it did wonders for me in my civilian career, and when that part of me is involved in my marriage, it leads to less than ideal outcomes. So the premise of this work is understanding all of the parts within us, all the different facets that make up who we are, so we can consciously choose which one we want in charge at what point in our life. In that example with that get shit done part of me, it's literally, you know, when I'm done with work, making the conscious effort to say like, okay, I don't need that part running the show now. I want to be the part of me that's listening, that's present and calm and patient. That's the part I want to bring to my wife and to my son. It's like, you know, the image I always have, and I have a picture of this years ago that I printed out, but of George Washington crossing the Delaware, that painting. You know, I love that because George is in charge and he is just running that ship. And the way that I envision it is he's choosing the different people to do the different tasks. The person at the rudder, the person navigating, the people rowing. That's how I envision this work. It's like the George Washington part of me understanding every other part of me, the value they bring to the table, their strengths and weaknesses, and being more conscious about which part leads and when. It's equally important to not suppress or discount any part. Usually if you suppress these parts or you know, try and shit on them, they'll come out sideways. They'll show up when you don't want them there. So it's kind of like every part of me, even the part of me that wants to kick and scream and be an asshole, that part of me, you know, maybe I bring that to a sales call. Maybe that's the part I actually want running the show. It's not like these things are always good or always bad. Every part of us serves a purpose. So anyways, after Voice Dialogues, this six-month course that Dan and I took together, we went on to co-lead a book group on a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy. I did an episode with that author, Dr. Robert Glover, who's actually part of the training that I've done this last year. You'll find it in our archives. Highly recommend it. Dan and I co-led this book club. And then after that, Dan invited me to a workshop with John Wineland. And at this point, I just signed up for the workshop without even looking at the website. That's how much love and respect I have for my friend Dan. I just signed up sight unseen. I'm like, dude, if you're doing this, I'm in. I flew out to California. This is all last March 2018. And I went to a weekend workshop with 30 to 40 other men. It was at this place in California called Wolf Connection, where literally wild wolves are rehabilitated on this property in the desert. It's seriously badass environment for this sort of men's work. And John's work blew my mind. It was way outside of my comfort zone, way different than any of the work I did previously. And at the time, I was involved with two different men's groups here in Denver, one of which I still do. It was wildly different than each of those groups. And so I came back to Denver. I felt more grounded and a better man and husband than I've ever been before. I promised myself that in 9 months, when they opened up the program for the year-long version, I would sign up. And I did. I did that this past year, and it's been exceptional. And I was going to say one other thing with that. Oh, one thing that I just noticed, you know, obviously last March I came back, felt like fucking invincible. And it obviously faded over time. I kind of slipped back into old patterns. I wasn't as grounded. I wasn't the ideal husband that I want to be. That was one of the reasons I wanted to do the year-long program. I wanted to install this in my body. I wanted to be surrounded and held accountable by other men. I didn't just want a weekend. I wanted every single week things that I was learning and growing and pushing myself. So this trip to Death Valley was our final week together with these 50 men in person. We're going to continue to meet weekly online and video chats for the next month, but it was a capstone sort of experience. 50 men in Death Valley, camping, practicing from 6:30 a.m. every morning until around 10 or 11 at night. Having a nine-month-old son, I actually got less sleep on this trip than when I'm at home, which is kind of crazy. But we had time for solitude and reflection, but much of the day was pretty structured. A lot of the work we've done this year is around breathing, around grounding, around being more aware of what's going on inside me, around me. We did a lot of physical practices to this end. That's one of the ways in that's different. You know, my men's groups here in Denver, as I've talked about on previous Behind the Uniforms, oftentimes they're talking, you know, hey, this is what's going on in my life, and we're talking and just kind of expressing things. John's work, there is some talking, but a lot of it is just not talking, which is great. I think it allows me to access things in a different way than if I'm talking about them, if I'm in my head. So if you've heard or done any Kundalini yoga, I had not until this program. If you've done Kundalini yoga, we do a fair amount of that in this program. We do a lot of activities that get you out of your head and get you out of your comfort zone. And in doing so, it's really helped me uncover some blind spots in my life. So I'll share a few of the things that I learned. I'll skip over most of the substance. I don't want to cheapen the experience by rationalizing it. I don't want to cheapen it by explaining it or trying to share why these events were so life-changing. I will, however, give one example. It's pretty out there, just to put a disclaimer out there. But one of the feelings that I uncovered in the first day or so there on our trip this last week with John Weiland's work was a strong sense of self-loathing, a sense that I hadn't really seen in myself before. I think generally I feel like of myself as a pretty upbeat, pretty happy, loving guy. And I'd say that there's probably about a fifth of the men in our group who had similar experiences where they identified this undercurrent of self-loathing in their life. And so one of the experiences around this sense of self-loathing was to fully express it, to own this sense of self-loathing, not to suppress it, not to hide from it, not to try and bury it, but to embrace it and actually be seen in that sense of self-loathing. We did this exercise late at night in a group. We were paired up in groups of four. So for me, there were two men who, with my consent, they each held on to my arm and shoulder. They were holding, literally holding me back, like I was trying to get into a fight, holding me back. And then the fourth man stood in front of me, maintaining eye contact with me. And I was given 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a fucking long time. I was given 2 minutes to fully express, as much as I was comfortable, to fully express my self-loathing, to struggle against these men, to give voice to the self-criticism that happens in my head and oftentimes just below the surface for me. It is a long time to be doing this, 2 minutes, and for those 2 minutes, the men are holding me back, giving me something to struggle against, since the masculine needs to struggle. That was actually, ironically, a lot of the conversation I had today with Micah Fink from Horses and Heroes, was how deeply we need challenge, we need struggle. So I had these 2 minutes where these men are holding me, I'm struggling against them, physically struggling as I'm fucking ranting and just anything that comes into my mind, any of that negative talk track that kind of goes on in my mind. And it's just kind of wild, you know, not just to act out something that I'm ashamed of, but to be seen and witnessed by these other men. To have that one man in front of me looking at me, maintaining my eye contact, just taking it in, breathing it in, not judging me, accepting me in this extremely vulnerable state, this side of me that I've never explored in private, let alone in the group like this. And then afterwards, once those 2 minutes were up, to look at each of those three men and see their love, their acceptance, their respect, see their support. I can only imagine how strange all of this must sound listening to it, but I found it extremely powerful. I found it a tremendously healing experience to uncover this blind spot, to delve in the deep end with it, and to be witnessed by other men in that. Not all the things we were doing are like that, but, you know, honestly, a lot of them aren't that far off from that. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. But it shifted my thinking around different areas of my life, being open to seeing where I'm out of integrity, seeing where I need to reinstall new software, where these old thoughts, patterns, habits, beliefs are holding me back and no longer serving me. And doing all of this in the desert of Death Valley, it was fucking wild. So I'm still processing a lot of what I learned. I know the next month with these men will be kind of unpacking a lot of it. But I did want to just kind of share, be vulnerable, share a few items that seemed relevant to share in this context here. The first one is just how good it feels to have time away, offline, no phone, no computer, and to do that with other men who are committed to becoming better men, who are committed to making an impact on their families, their communities, their world. how good it feels to be honest and just vulnerable in conversation, to drop the bullshit, drop the meaningless chatter about pop culture and things that ultimately don't matter, and talk about what's going on in our lives. It felt like the difference between eating McDonald's and having like a home-cooked, healthy meal, just deeply nourishing. I've come to know, respect, and love the men in this group over this last year, and that was its own realization for me. I realized that I honestly don't think I've said the words, "I love you," to another man outside of my family, you know, my father, my brothers, maybe my uncles, in my entire adult life. I've never said that. And I imagine, you know, just for me personally, my own experience, that many of that comes from my experience at the Naval Academy, my time in the Navy, where a lot of my experience had tinges of homophobia and just, you know, making jokes about it and just kind of avoiding that. And yeah, and so it felt awkward, but it also felt great to say "I love you" to many of the men in this group, to express love, to be open to love, and feel the commitment we have to each other, how we're challenging and calling each other forth to be better versions of ourselves, being unwilling to let any of us compromise in our relentless pursuit of having the biggest impact we can on the world. You know, extending on that thread, I realized through some of the exercises how little I let love into my life, how it just kind of clamped down, not just with men. It made me think of how often with my son, 9 months old son, Bodie, you know, I'm letting his love in through a tiny straw. He has this ocean of just raw love that he's sending out. And I just oftentimes clamp down and don't let it all in. Even more so with my wife, I had this overwhelming sense of how much and how deeply she loves me. And there as well, I'm often not allowing myself to receive that love. I'll make up stories thinking she's, you know, out to get me. She's fighting my career. She's trying to hold me back. She wants all of my time. She wants to dominate me. She wants to whatever the stupid story is, instead of seeing all the love she has for me. And, you know, oftentimes it may be packaged differently than I'm expecting, but even her occasional nags, even her wanting to spend more time with me or asking me to bring the laundry up from downstairs, even those things are her way of expressing love. And it feels like at times I'm accusing her of not loving me or not valuing me or whatever my story is, when in fact it has nothing to do with her. I'm closed. I'm not open to her love. You know, and to take this even a layer deeper, I felt this not just with my son and with Rebecca, I felt this with God or the universe or the world or whatever you want to call it, how I often behave as if the world is out to get me, as if God is trying to punish me, as if the universe is trying to teach me a lesson. When in fact, there's unlimited, I believe, unlimited love out there just waiting for me. And all I have to do is open to it. I don't have to earn it. I don't have to deserve it. I don't have to behave in a certain way to be worthy of it. It's just unconditional love available on demand. And you can imagine, you know, even if that concept seems foreign to you, you can imagine how shifting my thinking around that, how that makes me show up differently with my son, with strangers, with cashiers, with my wife. Another thing I learned about is how much fear I have. John has this concept that he calls the emerging world, how we have deep-seated beliefs that taint the world that emerges around us. In business school, we called a similar concept confirmation bias, that if I believe, I don't know, red cars are better than black cars, I'm going to notice every red car that's better than a black car. I'm going to notice the evidence that confirms that belief. I'm going to dismiss, even subconsciously, any evidence that might hint at black cars being better than red cars. So in John's version, what he calls the emerging world, we delved in to discovering some of our deepest beliefs, even if they occur below the surface of our consciousness. So one that I found, just to make this tactical, was the belief that operates a lot of my programming, the belief that the world is not safe. All the ways I behave in which I'm believing the world isn't safe. How I worry about my wife and my son's safety, how I worry and stress about my career and finances, how I worry about a million things outside of my control. And you can imagine that if my belief is the world is not safe, not only does that change the way that I show up in the world with others, with strangers, with myself, with my job, you can imagine how I'll just start to grasp and interpret the world around me in those terms. You know, if someone stands me up on a call, it's because they don't respect me. If I get stuck at a red light, it's because everyone's out to get me. It just really starts to taint the events. So I start to see it as the world that I want to see, or that my beliefs want me to see. And so we worked to reverse many of these deep-seated beliefs. So for that example, the world is not safe, I worked with a phrase that to me resonated as the opposite. And that for me is the world is my fucking playground. That connected with me. And then what was wild for me is when I got back to Denver a couple days later, yesterday I got to take my 9-month-old son to a gym class. And I got to see this firsthand in a really powerful way, just watching the way he saunters around the little play gym like he owns it. He doesn't have an ounce of fear. He plays where he wants to play. He does what he wants to do without feeling self-conscious. There is no fear of getting hurt. He has no fear of being rejected by other kids. He has no fear of not kicking the ball right or climbing the toys in the wrong way. He just has a blast. He just does his thing. He's having fun. He does what feels right. He doesn't even have a second thought. And he's really my role model for that. The world is my fucking playground. My son Bodhi embodied that for me yesterday. It was really, really incredible. So anyways, if you're listening to this point, I'm guessing some of this connects or some of this seems really fucking weird, and that's all okay. Whatever your reaction is, my intention in sharing all of this isn't to have you sign up for John's Embodied Men's Leadership Training Group. It's not to have you look up to me. It's not to have you look down on me for doing this work. I just wanted to share my experience. And my biggest thing is to encourage you, if you're listening this far, to find some sort of tribe, some community, some group that is, and this is the important part, that is outside of your comfort zone, where the men or women of the group are committed to deepening in their life. They don't want to live on the surface. They want to go deeper. They want to be better versions of themselves. They want to grow and learn to improve who they are, to have a bigger impact on the world by being a better version of themselves. For many of you, that might be church. It might be a men's or women's group. It could be a book club. It could be an event like Tony Robbins or Landmark, or there's so many things like that. The more the event or group scares you, intimidates you, or makes you want to judge it and make fun of it, the more that is likely a group where you're going to grow. Just my two cents. So I don't have a dog in the fight in terms of what you do. Just like with the normal podcast, I don't have a dog in the fight in which career path you choose. I hope you choose a path that's in alignment with who you are, that's uniquely suited to you. And just like in this work, I hope that you find something that helps challenge and support you to be the best version of yourself possible. Last thing, I'll just throw this out, is I'm noodling a lot these days about starting a second podcast. I've been talking with Steve Bain about this for months now. One of the ideas I'm thinking of is related to all of this last section here. It's a take on the personal side of these Beyond the Uniform episodes, and actually take that and turn it into an entire series. If I went that route, the format I've been playing with in my head is pretty different than this. Instead of just talking, it would actually be sharing live audio from these events and conversations and actually showing what it's like to be doing this work and all the good and bad that comes with that. If that does resonate with you, please let me know, Justin at beyondtheuniform.org or the contact form at beyondtheuniform.org. I'm in this major information collection phase, figuring out where I want to extend when it comes to podcasting. And so even one or two data points are really helpful. And I am open to very positive and very negative reactions. And either of those will play a role in just all the data I'm throwing in the blender right now as I'm stewing over what I want to do next in addition to Beyond the Uniform. So that is all for this week. Monday's episode is with Verizon, Peter Vanderloo, the happy lawyer. Thursday's is with Excel's Shannon Gregory. Both of them are fantastic episodes, so please tune in. Both are also with companies who donated money to Beyond the Uniform so we can do more of what we're doing, expand, and continue to keep this free for veterans. So your extra support on these episodes by listening to them is greatly appreciated. Take care and have a wonderful Veterans Day.